Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Brew Seal in New York. Hey, it's April 9th, 2013. We've got an awesome show. Thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. If you want to learn more about the world of beer, beer education, and check out the Beer Cloud to find out where to get your favorite beer, go to GreatBrewers.com. And thank you to our other supporter, Good Brew Seal, GoodBrewSeal.com. Right now, there's 41 New York City beer bars that serve and promote really good craft beer. All right. So this is an awesome show, a very special show. We've done a few shows in the past about cider, and one of our favorite cider makers in the world is Tom Oliver. He's here from England. He's collaborated with Greg Hall, our buddy, formerly of Goose Island Brewing, who's now starting a Virtue Cider in Michigan. So he's done a lot of great things, but we have some of his ciders here today, and we're joined by Tom Oliver, B.R. Roya, and Joel Shelton from the Shelton Brothers, who import it. So, Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jimmy. Great to be here.
The first question I have to ask is, please say your name and the village that you're from in England.
Okay, so my name is Tom Oliver, and the village is Ogle Pitchard in Herefordshire, in case anyone in Herefordshire is listening.
All right. And B.R. and Joel, how did you guys ever... You guys have so many beers and ciders with Shelton Brothers, and you guys are started in Belgium, and you know, you're in France and New Zealand. How did you guys ever meet Tom, and how did you guys ever start bringing in cider in addition to your excellent beer portfolio?
That was Joel's brother, Will. Joel and Dan's brother, who traveled to England and said, hey, I just had a revelation that cider can actually be good. It's not an overly sweetened beverage to get you drunk. It's as complex as a good lambic and is interesting, and you know, there's that sense of terroir that comes out of it from growing the local orchards, the local apples. It's a very traditional cider growing region that Tom will tell us about.
Yeah, and we've seen a big change in this in New York City the last 2 years. Has been Cider Week New York, and at my place, Jimmy's Number 43, we're selling more cider than wine now. And also, you know, there's a connection to agriculture. We're trying to really represent the cider makers who grow their own apples, and we know some cider makers in New York who also grow grapes and make wine, and they're making cider. So, Tom, I know you kind of fall into that category. Tell us a little about it. This is a family business. It goes way back. Tell us about Oliver.
Yep. Cider's been made on the farm through the last three centuries. And at this particular moment in time, I think we see cider as probably having the brightest future that it's ever had, because the interest is not just from the diehard cider drinker, but younger people now switching on to the possibility that cider definitely offers them something that's special. And this in turn is meaning that we can make better ciders because there's more purpose. So we've taken it from being a farm gate, whoever turns up with any old container, you'll fill it. In the last 15 years, the whole thing's turned around in the UK. And I think that's spreading around the world now.
So growing up, your father was making cider and wine?
My dad was more a fruit wine maker. My granddad was made cider, and my granddad made cider because it was demanded to the workforce. Enjoyed the cider in the summer when they were making hay. You sweat a lot, you need to replace the fluids, and cider was a good healthy way of doing it. These things have to move on, and you can no longer do that.
We have another guest here, Tony Forder. He's the editor of Ale Street News, one of the leading American craft beer magazines. So, Tony, you're from England as well. Tell us a little bit about the cider culture in England.
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit. Jimmy, I'm from Sussex, and the first time I ever got drunk was when some friends of mine stole some cider from the neighboring woodyard when I was 13 years, and it was quite an introduction to cider. But it's really a great alternative to beer. I find it really refreshing, sort of as an aperitif kind of thing, or a daytime drink. But it's very popular, you know, all over England.
Yeah, Tom, tell us more about the cider culture in England.
Okay. Well, there's always been your diehard cider drinker who will drink the still dry ciders that are the way that the apple, when it's fully fermented, will give you this dry, still cider. But nowadays, they're able to sparkle ciders, carbonate them, introduce some sweetness, and so they have a real appeal across the board, from the dry wine drinker to the younger person who wants a little bit of sweetness and a little bit of fizz, and this gives you such a breadth of choice with cider. This cider that you're trying here, this Gold Rush, this was the cider that Greg Hall and myself made together. It was the first transatlantic link up in terms of cider, and it's a full bittersweet cider made with the classic cider apples like Yarlington Mill and Dabinet that grow in the orchards of Herefordshire and down in Somerset and Devon and all the cider growing apple growing counties of England. And it's got some bitterness, it's got some dryness, got some astringency, got a sort of barnyardy, farmy feel to it too, got a nice apple-y sweetness to it, and a little bit of that acid giving you some zing to it. So it's a big, full drink, and this is the sort of drink that really represents what bittersweet cider apples can give you. And some people love it, some people are a little bit put off by it. But I'm very pleased to say a couple of weeks ago at Glencap, which is the Great Lakes Cider and Perry competition, there were two ciders that were awarded gold medals in the English cider section, and this was one of them. And
was that in America or England?
That was in America at the Great Lakes.
Because yeah, Greg Hall, of course, is a former Goose Island brewer who is now into cider. So
is that a new thing, the Great Lakes Cider?
They've been going for at least 8 years, and I'm sure someone will correct me on that. But they had over 450 entries this year, which was double the entry from previous years. It was a great example of just how much cider is now being made at a craft level in America, and how the interest is growing. It's fantastic. You know, the choice now is exploding. And I think that's the great thing that you get with cider, is choice. And it's up to you to make the choice of what you like.
Well, there's so many styles. Another guest here today, it's Clint Carter from Men's Health. He just put together a really awesome beer piece in the magazine. Clint, do you guys get to taste a lot of ciders in the course of your magazine work?
Yeah, we do taste some ciders, but I'll say that I haven't had this Gold Rush, and this is excellent. I love this. You know, it's got a lot of the things that I like in like a good saison, even that dryness,
okay,
a little bit spicy and stuff. Yeah, and yeah. So you know, I'm certainly interested in exploring more. I'm kind of a diehard beer drinker, but you know, anything that I can taste that tastes as good as this, I'm interested in drinking more of.
No, I definitely feel like that for us, the last couple of years in New York with Cider Week in New York, we've been exposed to a lot more. You know, traditional cider is everything from Asturias in Spain, where it's super funky and tart, to your interesting English ales and, ciders. I'm thinking beer in my head, you know. But, let's raise our glasses to you, Tom. Yeah, I mean, and I want to talk more about just tell us about your day in your life, man, because you grew up, it's a farm, and you've been part of this. It's like the cycle of what? It's agriculture, and you're making, you know, alcohol.
Yep.
This is like going back, well, how many years? Hundreds of years, right?
Yeah. Well, it is. But, of course, I can only really talk about my time, the small amount of time I've been here. And what's happened for us is on the farm, we were for all my youth, hop growers as well. And hops, which I know is a main ingredient in beers, which is so close to everybody's heart here, I was hoping that hops would sustain us.
Ooh, ooh,
that beautiful, like that. Beautiful pop from one of those bottle-conditioned ciders there. And the hops would be the main cash crop for the farm, but in 1999 this ceased to be. And so what happened is we had to work out. Diversification is the name of the game in agriculture on small farms in the UK. And one of the options for us was to take the cider and perry and make it into a larger I use the word commercial concern, but I think that's almost laughable. I don't make cider as a commercial concern. The first and foremost is I try to make cider that is the best, and then from there I hope I can make it a great commercial concern. But I want to make the best cider, as we that's the point of doing it.
BR, so like for example, the Gold Rush, which is the collaboration with Greg Hall and Tom Oliver. Where in America, like what cities can you get this in?
Well, that opens up the can of worms of distribution in the U.S. But I would say in most of the major cities, you can get the Gold Rush as well as
so
the
Chicago,
San Francisco. San Francisco, Boston, yeah, place in Philadelphia, certainly. But it's yeah, we came into cider. I mean, cider was part of our portfolio before I began with the company. But you know, there was a lot of us don't really know that or didn't know that much about cider. Lauren Shepherd is our cider expert. She's out in Colorado, and she's the one who deals with Tom on a day-to-day basis. But he's also introduced us to some other fantastic UK cider makers, including Hogan's Ciders, and also we have Henny's. We have several cider makers from...
I've had the Henny's, yeah. And yeah. I think we got Hogan in. We're going to have a tasting.
Yes, we are.
If anyone's in New York City, 7:30 tonight, Jimmy's number 43. Tom Oliver is going to give a tasting of ciders.
Yeah, and we also have a few from the North America. We've got West County from in Western Massachusetts, Appletreau from Wisconsin. And we started recently bringing in a Normandy cider, Duperche from Le Mertier.
And Jill, how does this work for you? I mean, you know, you're one of the Shelton brothers. You get to do all these fun things, beer, of course. Do you get engaged in any of the cider events or cider makers and all that stuff?
Well, whenever I have the chance. I mean, we've been talking about cider on our show a lot. We admit, the Shelton Brothers, that is, and most of our employees, that we don't really know enough about it. And we're kind of learning as we import, which is a good way to learn because you get free cider. But I've actually learned as much about it today as I have in all the time previous, just being with Tom and hearing about it. We deal with so much beer that we don't even... You know, we have so many breweries. We deal with small breweries, and now we're just getting into cider. And Lauren, as was mentioned before, Lauren, our representative in Colorado, is the expert. And she's been pushing us to appreciate cider, and we kind of make fun of her just because it's just fun to pick on a girl, you know. But and BR too. We don't pick on BR, but
you can't pick on beer.
Yeah, we didn't grow up with it. You know, none of us grew up with it. We drank beer as kids, and cider was juice when we were growing up, and so we all have to learn about it. And Tom grew up with it, and he's teaching us. I think in the U.S. That cider actually can get you feeling really good and can be as funky and as interesting and complex as any good beer. And I think it's going to start taking over a huge part of the alcohol market, honestly. I mean, we're loving it. It's just a matter of time before we sort of learn more about it, and that's true of the American people in general and people everywhere else.
Tom, have you tried a number of American ciders?
I have. You know, not always the case, but I am a cider drinker. I make it, but I drink it, and I would much rather drink other people's ciders than mine. So Farnham Hill, I'm very familiar with Steve Woods, a number of great ciders from there. Greg Hall ciders, I know Red Streak, and I'm looking forward to trying Lapinette and the Mitten. And I try everywhere I go. If there's a cider available, I'll try it. And, you know, and the great thing about it is now, the whole approach to cider in America, I feel, is a lot more ordered. In the UK, it's still bound up in the traditions of the farm, and it fits in with the season, and at the end of the year, when you've got all the rest of the harvest in, yes, you'll get the apples in, and you'll make cider, and then you'll drink it. Whereas I think coming into America, I just see a lot more application of science, a lot more thought about it, and I'm really excited because I think the options for quality are fantastic, and without quality, you know, you're lost. So
yeah, I think that's true. One development I think we've seen a lot is that you know, the ciders that were available, say, 5 years ago, 10 years, 5 years ago, tend to be really on the sweeter side. And what we've seen, you know, in the last couple of years is really a broadening of the whole category of the, you know, getting more traditional drier ciders into the market. So there's just, you know, all kinds of, you know, it's really just there's a lot more availability into the traditional.
And we're lucky here in New York in terms that we have the Hudson Valley, you know, just up north, and a lot of those cider makers are combining both, or some, they're focusing either on a British cider tradition or a French cider tradition, or combining the two, or doing something completely different. So there's a really nice range that we can get here in New York City. We're fairly lucky being in an apple-growing region.
All right. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes to talk more about cider with Tom Oliver on Beer Sessions Radio.
You're listening to Favorite Flower by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey,
know HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a member-supported nonprofit organization? If you like what you're listening to, go to our website and click that donate button. Become a member and get special discounts, invites, VIP treatment, t-shirts, and more. Support us in our mission to bring you the freshest food content in the nation.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni with a special guest, Tom Oliver, the finest cider maker and perry maker in England, and a whole bunch of people from Shelton Brothers, Ale Street News, and Men's Health. Awesome. Joel Shelton, tell us about, you just popped another cider from Tom Oliver in England. What is it?
Let me read the label there, Jimmy. Oliver's Herefordshire Cider Medium. It's a very basic name, Tom. Tom, we talked earlier today with you about your preference in cider. You said you want it bone dry.
I like
and
it
still.
Yep, bone
this
dry.
Is medium. This is going to be a little to the right of your preference.
Yep, but I hope while you were drinking it, this is a cider that's conditioned in the bottle, so the sparkle is derived from the fermentation finishing in the bottle. It's got a lovely apple sweetness to it, which is the unfermented apple sugars, but there's some nice acidity to balance it, and then you've got those beautiful tannins, which give you a little bit of roughness on the tongue at the end, give you some real depth to the drink and some length to it. But this is really quite sweet. But because of the tannins and the acidity, I think it holds together really well as a drink, and it's not too off-putting.
Tom, this brings up a good point. The number of styles that you make, you're making ciders and perries, dry cider, medium cider. Tell us your philosophy behind
that. Well, it's a disaster area in terms of sensibilities, because what we try and do at home, if you walk into our cider house, I hope to have at least a dozen, if not 16, different bottled ciders, and that I'll find a cider for you whether you drink cider or not, and that's the idea. So we range from dry to sweet, from still to sparkling, and everything in between. And then that's just the bottle products. We have draft products, so we'll have dry, medium, and sweet ciders. We'll have single variety ciders, so those are ciders made from individual apples. Apples like the Yarlington Mill, which is not a classic single variety apple, but it makes a beautiful, warm, gentle, apple-y cider. And then we have perries. And we haven't even started on the perries, the single variety perries, the blended perries. So I hope that when anyone comes to our cider house, and, you know, do feel free if you're ever in Ockle Pitchard in Herefordshire, please come and visit us, and you can try 20 different ciders and perries.
Tom, if someone doesn't like any of them, do you force them to like one when they visit you?
I try never to resort to violence. But I sort of try to do a bit of a pleading thing, and then if that doesn't work, I just say, you know, have some cheese.
Yeah, I would mention to you mention the fact that the young generation is really getting to ciders. I can verify that my both daughters, one who's not quite drinking age yet, but the other is, they really do like cider a lot.
I trust that you're bringing them up very properly then, Tony, because exposure to cider is a great thing. And I think the whole thing that's happened in the UK, and it's known as the Magners effect, cider was introduced and it was made to become a trendy drink that young people really enjoyed. And you would pass bars in London at 6:30 in the evening when everyone tips out the office. Young people will be out drinking cider. That was unheard of 10 or 15 years ago. So, you know, cider has seen somewhat of a revolution there, and I see it going through a similar growing process with different things urging it forward over here as well.
One thing, I actually have a funny anecdote. Yes, cider has come a long way. Back in the 90s, there was this English show, Absolutely Fabulous. Does anyone know that show? Fab? Okay. Yeah. So there was one episode where, you know, the two older ladies, they were the wild partying chicks from the 70s, and their children were, like, kind of mild and meek. And they would go out, and after their, you know, study session, they would each, like, share a can of cider. And they made fun of it because it was, like, it wasn't considered drinking. And I think in the back of a lot of our minds that cider wasn't really considered, like, a drink. But only now, with you know, artisanal producers, do we consider it that way. So, is that funny or not? No. It was funny on the show. If you haven't, let's pull up that clip. Come on, absolutely fabulous. Come on.
Yeah.
I'd be interested, Tom. When you taste around, when you're here tasting different ciders, do you feel like there are a lot of bad ciders that are creating a bad impression for the overall category?
I just think that the ciders are made for a purpose, and you know what I might deem as a cider that's not appropriate for me is probably because it's been designed for an 18-year-old lady who's going to drink it in a hot nightclub at a very chilled temperature, and it's going to be just what she wants to drink, but it certainly won't be what I want to drink.
But what are some of those brands? Because I don't want to drink that stuff.
Yeah. Over here, you've got to get yourself in trouble now.
Joel, tell us. What is it? Magners? What are these?
Well, I was just going to say, you could go there if you want to meet 18-year-old ladies. That's a different story.
Yeah, I'd say that I've certainly had some ciders that made me think more along the lines of Zima or something like that. But these...
Whatever happened to Zima, by the way?
It's enough, a shame.
Cut it. I'm sorry I brought up the Magners.
There is an area where they're adding all kinds of different fruit flavors into, you know, commercial ciders, which is, you know, it's kind of like the flavor malt beverage kind of thing.
So how do we know? Like, how do we... Because one thing that I like about the new hard cider scene is that it's a specialty product. I can get it at good Brazil bars like Jimmy's Number 43 and specialty, you know, stores. But if I walk into the typical, you know, wherever you get your drinks... I wouldn't get a cider because I don't want to just get an apple alcohol product, you know?
I think this is where cider is really up for grabs. And I think I certainly think Greg Hall has come in with an angle on this. You know, his early ciders are only available on draft. And I think that in itself gives you an idea of where he's targeting, where he sees the opportunities, because you do. I want to be able to walk into a pub anywhere in the world and get a good cider on draft, and it's not possible at the moment, and it's not possible in England all the time. Don't think that, you know, it's some sort of mecca of good cider. The hardest place to find good draft cider is in my home county. It's an extraordinary thing, but we struggle, you know. So you're more likely to find good draft cider in London.
So it also has like an identity crisis where there's really good ciders like yours and Farnham Hill that we love, and then I'm getting pitched all the time. It's a cider, but they've added honey or maple syrup. So it's more of a like a beverage, you know?
Yeah, this is a tradition actually started from when cider first arrived in America, Mayflower and Boston. From there's the tradition, as I understand, of using raisins and honey in ciders. And this is not just for meads, but it's for ciders as well. And it just makes cider, you're almost taking it back to its roots here. So I'm not sure it's a bad thing or a good thing, but it's just another way of selling cider.
Well, Beer, we had the terrific Gold Rush that Tom made with Greg Hall, and we just had the Herefordshire, the medium. Are there any more ciders or Perry's here tonight for us to talk about?
No, we don't have any more ciders or Perry's, but we've got plenty of beer.
Let's pop some beer and let's go into Perry's since we're popping beer.
One thing I did want to mention about all of Tom's ciders is, and this is what we really enjoy about them, is that they're all naturally fermented, and you know, he uses the wild yeast that are there on the skins and in the air to ferment the ciders, which really creates just a really nice character to them.
Yeah, I think wild yeasts are so interesting, and I admire every beer person that dabbles in the wild yeast world.
So is there a taste of Brettanomyces in here?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, but you can get, in ciders, you can get what appears to be a Brett influence, and it's not actually coming from the Brett. But yeah, there are some flavor aspects that definitely hinge on
Brettanomyces. Well, the acidity of the apples reminds you of the Brett sometimes, right?
Yeah,
I think you guys hang out too much. Yeah. Joel, Sheldon, and Tom. Let's flip this. Okay, now we're talking about Perry because we got cider down. Everyone kind of knows cider, but Perry—that's pear cider. Now, how is that tradition different in the process and all that?
Okay, so you've got to understand with Perry, and we're talking about Perry made from Perry pears. Now, this is a particularly unique type of fruit. It's an inedible pear as a whole. They grow on great big old trees that are massive. These trees are 100, 150, 200 years old. They stand out in the countryside, and when they blossom, which is about now, it should be in the UK if the weather was half decent, it's these great big trees covered in this white blossom. They look absolutely fantastic, but there's very few of them. So true Perry made from Perry pears is a very scarce drink. And therefore, in order to make commercial use of the popularity of cider, and therefore pear cider has been invented. And pear cider is a drink made from whatever people put in it. But I can suggest that there's a little bit of cider in there, there's a little bit of imported pear juice, and there's a little bit of this and that and the other. But once again, you know, perry, truly a traditional product from a very small area of Herefordshire, Worcestershire and Gloucestershire. And it's a fantastic drink, and a worthy addition.
So typically, tell us, like, you know, when you're growing, you start by growing trees. So this is agriculture.
Yeah.
You're growing apple trees and you're growing pear trees. What's the minimum age for each tree before you can make a quality product?
Okay, so you can get all different sorts of trees with different rootstocks that give you maturity at different ages. But the traditional trees on tall stems, standard trees, for apples it's 10 years, for pears it's 30 years before you get a commercial return. This is a lifetime's investment in land and in trees and in looking after them. The newer varieties going on smaller rootstocks and bush things, you can get yields after 1, 2, or 3 years. Commercially, there's some great things going on in breeding technology to get these smaller trees fruiting more quickly. But I will say the best ciders I make come from trees that are 70 or 80 years old or more. And that's because they're nitrogen deprived. The fruit is. They are beyond doing anything other than just let them grow. You know, you may get the sheep or cattle grazing underneath them. But these nitrogen-starved trees give you the best fruit for working with.
So how does that relate to, I know, like with wine, they have old vine wines. Is that the same kind of thing?
You would, but we don't extol the virtues of old apple trees. But I really think it's yet another possibility. You know, maybe I should say, I was reviewing some of the ciders and pears I made a few weeks ago, and what became clear to me is I need to really remember the old trees produce the best fruit for making the sort of ciders and pears I make. And I can't get away from that. It's a fact.
Do you do any distillation?
I don't. I wish I did, but I think I've left it too late in my life to start distilling because, you know, to get a cider brandy, it needs to be at least 3 years. So that's like a 5-year period from now. Well, if I wanted a good 20-year-old, that would put me at...
Don't give it away.
Okay.
And BR, what was your
question?
I was going
to say, Tom, you grow some of your own perry pears.
Yes.
But then Lawrence told me great stories of you just driving about, sometimes collecting pears from...
Yep.
Other sources.
I love finding perry pear trees, and I love finding reasons to go on to people's land and you know, and scrump ciders and perries rather, and cider apples. I did discover a variety called Copy about 10 years ago. This was a variety that had been lost and was an endangered variety. Nobody knew where there was a tree with this variety on, and I just happened to find this one tree in an orchard, an old orchard. And so we saved one variety. A number of people have found other old varieties. So we've now got a situation where we have 120 perry pear varieties preserved in at least 4 different locations in the UK, which is fantastic. So in terms of agriculture, in terms of biodiversity, and in terms of just preserving the history of something, it's ongoing and it's exciting.
That's amazing. You know, for me too, like, I love all the new real great hard ciders, but the really good old school perry, like your perry, is amazing. And I've had Christian Drouin from Normandy. And his perry really stands out as well.
There's some fantastic Poires from Normandy. You know, I think if you give it that it's the rarest of raw materials, then in order to you know, make the most of it, we should make the best perry from them.
Excellent. Hey, let's stop on that note, because that was the best thing I heard all night. I'm looking forward to drinking perries and ciders tonight with Tom Oliver, one of our favorite cider makers in the world, at Jimmy's number 43 tonight. All right, we'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
You're listening to Off My Mind by Pamela Royal on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Cloudist, Tony Ford, Illustrated News Editor, Poet, and Flautist. A little bit of the culture of England. There's a guy who's a beer editor, and he also plays flute. Amazing. And you got a guy over there, they grow... Thank you. It's the Perry tree, you know. The Perry tree brings out... He doesn't even have a flute. He made that noise with his mouth. It's amazing. All right, so hey, Tony, you are down at Craft Brewers Conference. You do your annual Ale Street News trip to Belgium. Tell us what's going on. You got these beers that are really awesome.
I bought a couple of beers. Of course, we did our annual trip to Belgium, and what can you bring back from Belgium except Westvleteren and 12?
And let's pop it. Why not?
Okay,
let's I never had that in my life.
Okay, really? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the rarest beer in the world, supposedly, but it seems to be getting a little more available recently. Thanks to the Sheldon.
And on that note, Sheldon Brothers, what did you guys do? It was over the winter. You guys did a short allocation. Tell us about this Westvleteren thing, because people went nuts.
We did a very brief 5-minute presentation of Westvleteren. What, it was in December? I mean, it was 5 minutes because it sold out so quickly, Jimmy. The monks there needed to raise some funds. They don't sell beer in the States ordinarily. They need to raise some funds to fix their monastery, and so they asked us to sell the beer in the States, and it turned into a big mess, you know, because everybody wanted it and not everybody could get it.
So you had to establish rules.
We had some kind of rules, and some people were upset because they didn't get it, and some people were happy because they did get it, and it turned out to this big PR problem for us.
But you did some things. You basically
hey, I didn't get it, and I was upset.
You sold it only in retail shops, right?
Certainly not in bars. Yeah,
no, it was only, and this shops. A lot of this was after long discussions with the monastery, and the monks were very adamant about that. They did this in Belgium as well, that it was only going to be available in retail shops, and it had to be sold for a particular price, and we tried to make sure there were a few problems, but on the whole, made that it was available and at this specific price. We didn't want people.
I know it's a cult item, and I have to say I'm kind of the guy that doesn't. I'm not into cult beers because
good for you, Jimmy.
I feel like there's so many good local beers and so many other beers that we can import and ciders. That when I have Westvleteren, I'm tasting it now. And people have said, "Oh, the Saint Bernardus is the same beer," or even a for me, one of my favorites is in your portfolio, the Akel Brewery, which is also Trappist. For me, the Akel is the top Trappist brewery.
Well, this beer is called the best beer in the world sometimes because of the rate beer and the beer advocate because it's so rare,
it's like hogwash,
and it's strong and rare and strong. I mean, basically, and it doesn't mean it's the best beer. I mean, you can't really say what's the best beer, but it's rare, and that's what sort of launched it up there.
It's a very good beer, and it's also personal preference. On Akel is definitely, they're one of the two Trappist breweries who actually the monks are involved in the day to day process. Westvleteren is the other.
So Westvleteren and Akel, and tell us a couple of your other top Belgian beers because you guys have. I mean, we're talking about ciders and perries, but really,
well, the Cantillon in general.
Cantillon,
yeah. Which is also rare, but not as rare as this. But deservedly, Cantillon is brilliant beer.
Tom, do you like some Belgian beers?
Yeah, Cantillon beers are fantastic. They just take your whole mouth on a whole different journey and pull you left and right and up and down and leave you long. It's just.
I think we need some flute music to go with that little bit.
Living in the past, yeah?
This is the ode to the Westvleteren. Many of us have never tried it, and I just did tonight. And many of you may one day. But I will say this. There's many good beers in this world out there. Many good ciders and perries.
Tony, I think you visited some of our other Belgian breweries.
Yeah, I can't say with the Westvleteren that we did see evidence of the reason they sent that beer to the U.S. was to raise money. There's a whole new wing on their monastery, which, and a few like new SUVs around, but we won't talk about that. But, we did go to De Struis. They very interesting. Our group of 30 sat in their schoolroom. They inhabit a schoolhouse, and Carlo there gave us a talk. And they were doing a lot of construction around there, so it was no heat, and it was freezing. And we were sitting in the schoolhouse, like good little school kids, and because they kept giving us beer. And
that's your Belgian
great,
trip.
Great beer, yeah. We had the Armonica and the Jesus beer, which is
fantastic. Let's talk about this beer, because now a lot. I think many people listening have never tried this beer. So it's the West Philitarian. Which one is this? Is there a particular beer, or
this
is it
the 12?
Beer?
Yeah, which is goes 8, 10, and 12.
All right, so what's like quad, six, quadruple, or what?
Yeah, it's a strong. It's basically the classic dark Trappist dark strong ale.
It's nice. Do they use candy sugars in this?
It's called 12 because that's the degree, but it's actually about 10.5-11% alcohol. I think
my favorite is the 8.
It should be noted, Jimmy, that the beer the monks drink is actually the lightest alcohol beer, which I think is about 6%, something like that.
I think it's even less. The one that they drink is actually not available commercially. It's just something that they make for themselves. It's a table beer. It's like an Abbey single, I guess we would call it.
The real strong Belgian Trappist beers are sort of a new invention in the big picture that are made to sell commercially. They're not really what the monks would ever drink.
The story with the St. Bernardus is we actually stayed at the St. Bernardus Bed and Breakfast where we drank the ABT 12. St. Bernardus used to make the beer for St. Sixtus Abbey, which is West Flederen, and then in the 90s their contract ran out, and that was when the Trappist said, if you want to be a Trappist, have the Trappist stamp, you have to brew in the monastery, and that's when West Flederen brought the beer back in-house. Meanwhile, St. Bernardus kept making the same beer. They just changed the name. So we did do a taste test, actually, late at night in the bed and breakfast between the St. Bernardus 12 and the West Flederen 12, and it was a preference, but I don't know if I should
say. Well, this is cool. A little background. You went to Belgium. Shelton Brothers has some cool things. Tom, so you also like beer as well as cider, I'm sure.
I enjoy anything with some character and some taste, but I will share this with you. There was a time about 5 or 6 years ago where a group of cider makers from England went over to Hasselt in Belgium to do a sort of weekend of talking about cider, selling cider in a wonderful old cider, not a cider barn, in a barn that had been converted just outside Hasselt. It was a fantastic weekend. But what started to happen was in the evening, after everything had died down and finished, we'd go to a bar in Hasselt, and I don't know what it was called, but it had the most incredible selection, as I'm sure lots of bars do. And what we decided to do on one night was start from the strongest and work down. Well, I know that I personally got to the 16th beer before I retired hurt, and some people went on longer than me. And but we all awoke the next day, eventually, with the sorest of heads, but having had a fantastic experience, because the difference between all the beers is extraordinary. Even when they seem to be similar, they're not. I love the variety.
All right, so that was West Flederen. Tony, you brought another beer.
Yeah, what's talking this about one? Going from the strong down to the lighter. This is actually the symposium beer that was brewed for the conference down at D.C.
The Craft Brewers Conference.
Craft Brewers Conference. It was a big, bit of a quick change around for us because we got back from Belgium on the Sunday and then down to D.C. for the conference on the Tuesday. It's called Beggars and Thieves. It was a collaboration between three breweries there. And interestingly, typically these conference beers get a bunch of brewers together and they make something really strong with tons of ingredients. This is more of a session. It's called Anti-Imperial Rye Lager. So that at 4.8%, 4.9%. So it shows you there are different trends in the craft brew industry than just making strong beer.
So I know it was made by DC Brown and the Brewer's Art and Devil's Backbone or something?
Devil's Backbone, yeah. Right, yeah,
so,
Virginia. Yeah.
So it was a Virginia, DC, and Maryland.
Exactly.
That's pretty great. I want Tom to try it too. So Tom, I think this is going back, talking about what the monks at West Flederen actually drink, and also Sheldon Brothers, for me, you were always pioneers in session beers. You know, 5-6 years ago when everyone was just coming up with their Imperial IPA, it was Dan Shelton who said, you know, we've got T-Rez Extra, and we've got, you know, Taurus Bulba, you know, all these real, like, sessionable but flavorful beers, like 4.5%. That's what I like to drink.
Well, Jim, we're so far ahead now. We're beyond that now. No, I'm just kidding. No, but we were just talking about the new thing being a session beer, that collaborative brew. I think it's a trend right now, which is a very good trend, because beer, the essence of beer, is something you drink a lot of, that you can handle a lot of beer at one night. I think Tom would understand that. You guys would understand growing up in England. session beer idea.
Absolutely. I mean, 4% was the standard for a bitter. And even the Fuller's ESB, for example, 5%, it was like, whoa, that is strong. But that's where beers start over here.
Screw it.
A lot of flavor, but not too much alcohol necessarily.
And that's one of the harder things with cider, because if you take it as it is just the fruit with the fruit sugars in it that the sun over the growing year has given you, then some years you'll get a 6% cider. But on a year when you have fantastic sun and maybe not much rain, you can get 7.5-8% ciders. Now that puts you into something that's half the strength of wine. And that does mean that in terms of if you're selling cider as a publican or whatever, then you really have to be aware that you've got to charge a good price for your product, because otherwise people aren't going to drink more than one or two pints if you're drinking pints.
And Clint, let's get you on here. So Clint Carter from Men's Health, you sent me like a number of emails for like a year.
Yes.
You guys came out with an awesome beer article. But you're also doing something about looking at nutritional aspect of beer.
Yeah, so you might not have understood how we were using all of the answers to your questions, but we were. So when you would recommend beers to us, we would send them off to a lab, and so we were looking at a lot of we were looking at calories, we were looking at folate, we were looking at polyphenols. I know it's a much different way to approach beer, but that's something that, you know, at least our readers are concerned about, so that's something that we care about too. But what we wound up doing was looking at a lot. We took 30 really amazing beers. We sent them all off to a lab. And what's interesting about beer that it hasn't really been acknowledged fully yet is it has a lot of the same like really nutritional qualities that, say, wine has been getting a lot of attention for. So it's got like polyphenols in there. The yeast gives it a lot of B vitamins, so we were looking at that. I mean, there's actually a lot of really good things in there, which is why there's a lot of, you know, research out there to suggest that people who drink in moderation are healthier on average. So we were looking at that, among other things, and just sort of geeking out on delicious beer, which is something I think we can all do.
So, Tom, do you think that drinking beer and cider is a part of a healthy lifestyle?
I think you've only got to look around this table to see that these are six bodies that are tuned to perfection. And therefore
we're buff.
Yeah, so you know, I think that it, you know, here's the evidence.
Tony's going to play some flute while I do my soliloquy. Thank you. You know, beer and cider, it keeps you going. We had a great song. It was called "I Like Beer," and it summed it all up. Sometimes you drink liquor, it makes you sicker, and you know, wine can slow you down because it's too much alcohol. But for me, beer and cider, you know, 4-6%, that's what I can drink. It keeps me going, and it gives me extra energy. I feel like if I had a good beer the night before, I wake up the next day. If I don't, I just get tired. So what else can you say about that? You can send in your answers to us at @beer_sessions on Twitter, because we're going to start a conversation about beer is healthy for you, man. I think it's part of a healthy lifestyle, you know? And Bjor, you got something to say. You're an athlete. You play hockey. You do all these things.
I'm a reluctant athlete.
But you're part of a healthy lifestyle, and you know, you consume beer. And
yeah. Well, what's hockey without beer, or beer without hockey?
It makes you violent. You can get out there.
But Jill, you don't have a healthy lifestyle, so you don't count. But I mean, Tom sure does.
Well, when I went to high school in Belgium, and actually my main sport, which I've been doing since I was about 8 or 10 years old, has been horseback riding. I no longer compete, but I still ride every week. And when I lived in Belgium, they would do these trail rides, I guess. I mean, we went through farmlands and through small towns, but it always went from the barn. We would go ride through the woods, through the farms, to another town, sit down at the cafe, and they would have beer and wine for us, and then the horses would get their snack, and we'd come back out and get back on our horses. So
since we're talking about some of your great beers, like West Flatarian, okay, so if you're out horseback riding and you had to pick a Shelton Brothers Belgian beer, what would that be tonight?
It's going to be one of the lower alcohol ones.
Well, give
for
us
sure.
a name. Come on.
I would probably have to go with one of the De La Seine beers, simply because, or the Bink Blonde. Oh, that's a tough one, Jimmy. You put me on the spot.
Well, Bink Blonde is pretty awesome.
I would say that beer goes very well with yoga. I've done beer tastings with my yoga class. Shout out to Joe Sixpack, the writer in Philadelphia, who his wife is a yoga instructor. He does yoga and beer tastings also.
And what about you, Joel? Do anything healthy with beer?
No.
Okay,
no,
you're out. And Clint from Men's Health, what about you? What's a healthy and beer combination?
I'm a cyclist, and something that I see over and over is that anybody who rides a bike, also finishes every long ride with a beer, which is like astonishing to me. It's all over the place.
And Tom, working on the farm, and tell us again the village you're from in England. What's it called?
It's Ockle Pitchard, and it comes from Ockle means ring of oaks because there are a lot of oak trees there, and Pitchard is because the whole estate was given to a knight who helped William the Conqueror in 1066, and he was from Picardy. So we've got the ring of oaks, Picardy, and it's Ockle Pitchard.
So what's like you're working on the farm? How do you finish your day with a healthy beverage? What would you choose?
Oh, you choose a cider, and you choose a dry cider, and I always choose not one of mine. I think I know mine back to front. But
well, I'll tell you what, we're leaving here soon. We're going to have a quick meal at Roberta's, and then we're going to Jimmy's number 43. We're going to taste all of Tom's ciders, including the Perry, which really stands out. If you haven't had Perry, you've got to try it, and you'll be a fanatic for it. And even for the price, it's not that expensive. You know, the price does come up.
Yeah, dead right there.
You know, there's not that much Perry out there, not that many people appreciate it. But when you try like Oliver's Perry, you'll get it.
And you should have the best. Don't worry about the price that much.
Yeah, beer is still cheaper than wine. All right, so hey, we're gonna do a quick run around. Everybody here is doing something cool. Tom, you're in town. The last thing is, what's going on in Michigan with Greg Hall?
Okay, so Greg and me are going to look at Gold Rush was the first combination between us. The second combination is going to have the word West in it, but the second cider is going to come out at the end of May, and I'm looking forward to blending it and launching it with Greg in Fenville and then in Chicago.
All right. And Clint, what's the next beer-related thing you're doing with Men's Health?
Well, I'm always drinking, and I think that that's significant. But the beer package is in the magazine that's on the stands right now. We've got Garrett Oliver talking about the best places to travel, Dale Talladega giving his ode to cheap beer. Charlie Bamforth, really smart guy, helped us devise this really great beer test that you contributed to. So a lot of cool stuff in there.
Awesome.
Hope you would check
BR,
it out.
BR, what's going on with the Shelton Brothers in the next couple weeks?
Well, we have The Festival Round 2 taking place in Portland, Maine on June 21st and 22nd. We're doing that in conjunction with 12% Imports, and all of our brewers, cider makers, and mead makers will be there pouring their beer, cider, and meads. And we'll also do a lot of events around New York City with a few of the producers who are coming in.
Looking forward to that. And Tony, what's going on at Ill Street News? Are you still selling that Crafty Carton?
Yeah, Crafty Carton. We're on version 3 is coming out now. And, you know, it's like I think liquids are cool in a carton. I saw somebody – there's water in a carton now. Like, you know, it's cool in plastic. Not that that's an issue with there.
So it's like the takeaway growler.
Takeaway growler in the carton. It's the hotels are really cashing onto it. You know, you take it to your hotel room or in glass-free areas. And then I am also recruiting American brewers for the American Pavilion at the Mondial de la Bière in Europe.
And when is that? That's in Strasbourg, France, right?
They moved to a town called Mulhouse, which is spelled Mulhouse.
France as well?
Yep, in Alsace.
Is that tied into the Montreal beer event?
Yes, it's their European version of it, and I'm putting together the American Pavilion again. So
that's terrific. Yeah. And Joel, you want to say anything else about the festival or anything?
BR said it all. You should all come to the festival. It's the best collection of brewers, cider makers, and mead makers in the world in one place. And the best thing is I'll be there, and I'll wear a name tag, and you can come up and talk to me.
All right. Okay. Well, hey, so check out our website for more events, and you can always go to goodbrazil.com and learn everything about beer. On June 14th and 15th, Savor, the premier beer and food pairing event, will be held in New York City. That's the Brewers Association. They're awesome. Check them out at savorcraftbeer.com. And we're organizing a very interesting thing in New York City that weekend. A bunch of the Long Island breweries, who are all our friends, are going to come to many Good Brazil bars, including Jimmy's number 43, and do special tastings because at Savor they only select certain breweries from around the country. And we're going to rock out Savor in New York City. All right.
Can I mention something, Jimmy, real quick?
Sure, Tom.
There is actually a cider festival in Long Island in the fall put on by Andy Calamano. So that's the first one ever. So
that's awesome. And we also have Cider Week New York, which is coming back in October. So we've got a lot of cider going on, and we'll have more shows. And I know Greg Hall is coming to New York tomorrow. Hang out with Tom. And one more thing, I'm going to give a little shout-out to our good friends. After 5 years, Beer Table will be closing its doors in Park Slope. They'll be searching for a larger space with a full kitchen. The closing day is set for April 27th. So go check out Beer Table while it's up. I'm sure it'll be back. And right now you can go to a Beer Table Pantry and Grand Central Station. So that's it. I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Brew Seal. So thanks to Tony, Clint, BR, Tom, and everybody else for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. Joel Shelton, too. Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor, and our engineer, Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.